AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe.
Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where we mill and dollop out, I don't know, what have you, any of the sciences from quasi to pseudo in that small range. That's what we do here. Hopefully. I don't know. Chelsea's got the episode. Hello, we are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, here today doing a Chelsea episode, as I guess I just said, and I will leave
it to
her here.
I'm going to do it, just like you said. Today, this week, whatever it is that you're listening to this, maybe this month, I'm staying true to my love of cryptids. And what's my favorite type of cryptid, you might ask? Though
is
you probably know.
See, I would think that they're ones that are near crypts because they keep truest to the name, is it not?
Yeah, but you know, I was just about to throw out Friar Bonatti, but he's not a cryptid. What's the one that likes the rum?
Oh, Farincinelli. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know why I got Friar Bonatti and Baron Samedi confused, but that's who that reminds me of that you just said. But for some fucked up reason, I love winged cryptids and humanoids, and they're better when they're together.
I like it when they're considered winged cryptids, just because feels like a better descriptor for a cryptid.
Yeah.
It's a winged cryptid? We have winged mammals. Now, we have winged mammals, those majestic flying rats. But winged bat, no, they're just not as good.
It's probably because a winged creature is so terrifying to me that is just why I love that so much.
Yeah.
And it's just like me and my fucked up personality. I don't know. Maybe it's because I already have that fear of winged beings. So it just adds to the horror of it all.
May I also just add that it's weird that it's not winged.
It is weird. Fucking English. It comes up every episode.
Yeah.
Why?
But man, language, if we call them winged cryptids, this would not be a good episode.
No.
Anyhow, they're winged from here on out.
Winged humanoids. So today I'm going to cover one of each, one winged, one humanoid, just to bring some balance into our lives. First up, I got the Van Meter Visitor. Have you heard of him?
Sounds like a parking maid that may or may not exist.
It does. Okay, I'm going to tell you. For five nights in September 1903, a strange creature with bat-like wings and a horn on its forehead that sometimes shot beams of light. Think a pterodactyl. It emits a foul smell, haunted the town, leaving behind footprints, plastic casts, and terrified witnesses. I'm assuming that the plaster casts were later collected and left
behind. Yeah, I'm really hoping.
Or probably collected.
Now, Chelsea, I'm just going to say, if you then come up that this winged creature has been defending the local, like, haunted mansion.
You said it wrong. Yeah.
What a winged creature.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm going to say that you accidentally watched an episode of Scooby-Doo and turned it into a cryptid episode.
I might have. Who's to say? That's rude to call me
out
like
that's
that.
Like half of Journey to the Fringe episodes.
We just watch Scooby-Doo and the rest is made up.
And then we take out the ending and the band of, I don't know, mystery-solving teens were there.
We leave the part out where the mystery is solved and the rest is just a Journey to the Fringe episode. I'm sorry that we finally let the secret out of the bag. A smaller, similar creature sometimes accompanied the Van Meter Visitor, depending on who you ask. Like I said, it's actually quite pterodactyl-looking creature. Speaking of English, pterodactyl?
Yeah, oh god.
That's just...
There's that one kid's book.
I have it. You actually
it's called
got
he
it.
He is for pterodactyl, yeah. And it, yeah. English sucks.
Yeah, it does. Okay, so the first sighting of the Van Meter monster occurred September 29th, 1903. That was so long ago. At around 1 a.m., downtown, right in the heart of the city's business district.
Wait, what city? Van Meter?
Maybe. I'm thinking, yeah. I don't actually say for sure. I'm pretty... Is Van Meter a city?
It's gotta be.
Yep. Iowa.
Oh, okay.
I hope there's not two. A businessman was returning home when he saw the Van Meter Griffith.
You gotta love these business people. They're doing so much business, but they're seeing the cryptids. That wizard frog. I forget where it was, but it was seen by a business.
Oh, the Loveland frog.
Yeah.
Not a humanoid, no, it's not nor Loveland is it winged, but he is one of my favorites. Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Loveland frog.
Okay.
That's for sure who you're talking about.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Oh, man, that is a great artist rendition.
Are you looking at the one? I don't even know how to describe this.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure we're looking at the same thing, but I have to make sure.
You can't describe it, so I'm pretty sure we're looking at the same thing. Let me take a look. That's him. I still picture the one from Futurama with the crown. Toad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hypnotoad. I don't know.
But Chelsea, just like, this is clearly a frog that is photoshopped to have legs and human hands. And
yeah, standing up.
They have a scale.
His butt looks weird. It. and look at the butt
of the frog with the little human butt. My favorite part, though, Chelsea, is that the scale to human size. No, and he's just waving at us. He's like, "Oh, hey, I'm the model for this."
Yeah, I don't know that you can get much accurate than this. Look at the shadow in the bushes, dude. But look how muscular his thighs are.
Oh yeah, no, that's a buff boy right there.
Oh, there.
Not the frog. Buff. The frog is not buff. It's just a frog.
No, the shadow is.
Wow. Yeah, it's got some ripples on that shadow.
Yeah, I know. He's fucking ripped. At least he did not skip leg day, that's for sure. Yeah.
No, okay. In real life, he skipped leg day. In Shadowverse, he did not skip leg day. Not a once.
No, not once.
Anyhow, sorry. This has nothing to do with this frog.
No, we were talking about the businessmen. Right, because it was two businessmen on the road home or something.
Yeah, that because spawned like that frog. A businessman is not a job. Like, it doesn't tell you anything about them.
But also, it was a businessman on the way home that encountered Ingrid Colt. They're all businessmen.
Yeah.
I mean, that businessman was selling sewing machines. I don't know what this businessman's up to. Okay, so let's find it. We haven't even gotten like 2 seconds into this episode.
It's beautiful. I already see the picture that we're using for this episode.
Okay, a businessman was returning home when he saw the Van Meter visitor for the first time. Ulysses Griffith, a local doctor, was awakened by a bright light shining into his bedroom window. That's creepy. He grabbed his shotgun and went outside to investigate. He saw a large creature perched on a telephone pole, emitting a beam of light from its horn. He fired at it, but it seemed unaffected and flew away.
Man,
how would you know that it had a horn?
I don't know. Maybe its lights that were shining down were blocked somewhat by a horn. You gotta love the American tradition of firing at the unexplained.
Fire first, ask questions later.
Yeah, or at the same time.
That's written on their flavor.
It's just not before.
Never. It's in the Constitution or something.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. This encounter was followed by more sightings, all from prominent people within the community, including the town doctor, a banker, and a teacher.
Wait, sorry.
You heard right.
No, I just want to... Wasn't the doctor the first one to see him anyways?
No, he was a businessman.
No, the doctor fired at him, didn't he?
He's a businessman. He was! It was a doctor, you're right. You were listening. I was not. I just got busted.
So He was okay. Both the doctor, and there was another doctor who was the town doctor. This guy just wasn't.
He was. Oh, yeah. You interpreted that all right. Okay, so they report seeing the monster perched on top of buildings and flying through the sky at high speeds. All of the witnesses agreed that it looked half human, half animal, with enormous bat wings, and some saying that it looked like the devil.
Yeah, you're going to get that. Whenever it's kind of human-like, you're just going to get
you the are. Devil. It's all up for interpretation.
Especially in, like, the Bible Belt.
Yeah, or anywhere. You could pretty much say anything's the devil.
Did he proposition anyone to build a church? Because then we would know it's the devil. He's a good guy.
No, I still feel so bad for that devil. He was just a good guy.
He was a good guy. They suspected he wasn't, but they had no reason to believe otherwise.
He just wanted, a church. He wanted a winery. My heart broke for that guy that night. The next night, around 1 a.m., Dr. Alcott, the town doctor.
Another freaking doctor.
There's so many doctors. It's just full of them.
Is this where the doctors who can't get jobs move?
Yes. Was sleeping in a room. How many town doctors can a place have in 1901?
1903. Come on.
Van Meter's fucking full of them. Was sleeping in a room at his office when he was awoken. I think this might be the same incident.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, it definitely is. Okay, the next night, local banker Clarence, in brackets, Peter, had an encounter with the visitor. After hearing about the previous night's encounters, Mr. Dunn felt he should watch over the bank. Fearing burglars, he brought along his shotgun for the night's watch. Around 1 a.m., he heard a strangling noise outside. What the hell is a strangling noise?
Why does the banker know what it sounds like when people are being strangled?
I don't know.
Peter, formerly known as Clarence, has some real talking to do, but he was clearly born in the 1800s, so he is clearly dead, too. So.
Yeah. Well, this is
only
1901.
On this one. No, it's 1903, and he's a banker, which means that he had to at least have enough schooling to become a banker, so he's at the earliest 16. So,
okay.
He was born in the 1800s.
Before he could investigate, he was hit full in the face with a blinding beam that shot through the front window. The light suddenly switched off and then back on again, as if scanning the room, finally swinging back at him. He could make out, quote, some kind of great form, end quote, behind the light. Dunn fired his shotgun at the mysterious being, right through the bank's front window.
He hasn't seen where the being is, though. He's only seen that light is coming through the window, so he is firing blindly.
Oh, yeah.
At whatever lighted strangler is out there.
Yeah. Then it vanished. Yeah, he gotta.
So he never actually saw it.
Shoot first, ask questions later. No, he didn't see it. I think that's on the flag. Yeah, it could have been someone with a flashlight.
Yeah. who was choking and was going to the nearest place because everybody in town's a doctor.
Yeah. In the morning, he noticed sets of large three-toed footprints outside the bank and claimed to have made plaster casts of them. Okay, so here's the plaster casts that were left behind.
I was just going to say, I don't like that he's only claimed. But okay, I'm glad that there's plaster casts left behind.
Yeah, those were the ones that we left behind that was mentioned earlier.
You can't see them, I'm just claiming.
By the following day, the previous night's events had circulated around town within all the doctors. Later that night...
Don't treat people for strangulation.
Local hardware store owner O.V. White had an encounter with the visitor. He was jolted awake by a metallic rasping sound outside his second floor room above his hardware store on Main Street. He grabbed his gun and moved towards the window. Outside, he saw the visitor.
Everybody lives in their business perched. In this town. And I'm
they
also...
do. And they're all doctors.
What the hell's the businessman do for a living? That, like, the hardware store owner and the banker aren't described as business people, but the businessman is.
That's such a good observation. Quite astute. He grabs his gun and moves towards the window. Outside, he saw the visitor perched close by on the crossbeam of a telephone pole. White, a known marksman, took deliberate aim. White is the guy. Remember, his name's O.V. White. He took deliberate aim and fired at the creature, unlike the previous guy who did not take deliberate aim.
It had no effect.
Yeah, no, he didn't even see that it was actually anything.
It was
and
a light.
It only seemed was trying to kill awaken the visitor.
Okay. Interesting.
The creature emitted a stupefying odor that overpowered White, knocking him unconscious.
Wait. Okay, so you shot it.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Emits an odor and he knocks him out. Okay.
That's quite the superpower. A smell would, that knocks someone out.
I would definitely disagree with him saying that the bullets did not affect the being in any way, because it clearly made it release an odor.
I wonder what kind of odor. If it was sulfurous.
One. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You gotta hate one that is described as stupefying. Mm. The shots awoke White's neighbor, Sidney Gregg, a doctor, who raced outside to see what the commotion was about. We can only assume he's a doctor. He watched in disbelief.
Somebody needs to assess the people involved.
None of these doctors can find any fucking work.
I feel like this is the town where the doctor who finishes last in the class has to move to because they can't get a job as a doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
And they all hear tale from their fellow lowest.
Any performing. Emergency, there's like a lineup of doctors seeing who can rush in there first. It's just chaos of doctors.
Trying to prove themselves. Never yell out in Van Meter, Iowa, is there a doctor in the wherever I am? Because you will just get
attacked. Surrounded by a crowd.
Yeah.
He watched in disbelief as the monster descended the telephone pole after the manner of a parrot, using its huge beak. What?
I have never seen a parrot maneuver down a telephone pole. I don't think I can picture this in any way.
No, I'm not. I've never heard anything put this way. Upon reaching the ground, it stood erect, and by Mr. Gregg's estimates, it was at least 8 feet high. Whatever it was, the light from its forehead was as bright as an electric headlight. The light again darted about just as it had the nights before in a searching motion. The creature paused only for a moment before taking off towards the old coal mine. The following night, strange sounds were heard coming from the abandoned coal mine at the edge of town, described by a local as, quote, though Satan and a regiment of imps were coming forth for a battle, end quote. Remember, this is 1903.
In the Bible.
Battle. No one talks like that this day.
Chelsea, I do just need to, this is not a parrot climbing down a telephone pole. It is a parrot climbing up a rope. But
are you this showing is, me something?
Yes, this is what I imagine.
As close
it
that we
kind
can
of
find.
Like.
Okay. I do love the beats.
Yeah, it probably had the same beats going on because that's coming from the parrot, I assume. So it's a very beak heavy descent, is what I'm getting from this.
Yeah. But have you heard any mention of a beak?
Well, it's been described as a pterodactyl, has it not?
Yeah.
So does that not just like by
but not
itself?
In any of the eyewitness accounts that we're reading, right?
You
did
know
anyone
that's
describe
a fair
it
point.
As a...
I've kind of just been assuming from you telling me that at the start that they're all just picturing this thing because they have described the horn, but you're right. I don't know if they've described a beak or a muzzle.
But I'm just saying that because these are my notes. But there is like eyewitness sketches, and it looks like a pterodactyl.
Okay.
You can go ahead and Google that if you want. Van Meter visitor.
Okay.
The visitor, accompanied by a second creature, were spotted emerging from the mine and taking off into the night. A large crowd of armed men gathered at the mine to ambush the creatures when they returned. They were reported as having enough firepower to have sunk the Spanish fleet. Shortly before dawn, the creatures returned. The crowd opened fire on the creatures. The crowd of doctors. To their bewilderment, the creatures were totally immune to their assault and only gave off the terrible odor as a response before they crawled back down into the mine.
They gotta stop saying that they're immune when they immediately respond with a repulsive smell.
That's true. That is a response to it. The next day, it was reported that a force of men had been set to work to barricade the mouth of the mine, sealing the creatures inside. The creatures were never seen again.
Is it still barricaded?
It has to be. You know what would be another good episode? Mine creatures. I've heard more than one instance of creatures coming from mines.
Yeah, you know what? That's a fair thing to say.
Now, I have a newspaper article related to another encounter with the Van Meter monster. I really hope it's a doctor. And I'm going to do my best to read it because it's one of these fucking old newspapers.
Oh, it's really great. Okay. Yeah.
Seeing strange things, half human, half beast with great bat-like wings. That was the easy part. That was the title. New York, October 12th. Something patch from Des Moines, Iowa, says the town of Van Meter, containing 1,000 persons, mostly doctors, is terribly wrought up by what is described as a horrible monster. Every man, woman, and child in the town is in a state of terror, and fully half of them fall to close their eyes in slumber except in broad daylight. Friday night, while the population was keeping the dreadful vigil, every electric light in the city was kept burning to satisfy the most timid. The monster put in its appearance Monday night. U.S. Griffith, an implement dealer, drove into town at 1 a.m. and saw what seemed to be an electric searchlight on Mayor and Griggs' store. While he gazed, it sailed across to another building and then disappeared. His story was not beloved next day?
I think believed is what it's supposed to be.
But the following night, Dr. A.C. Olcott, who sleeps in his office on the principal street, was awakened by a bright light shining in his face. He grabbed a shotgun and ran outside the building where he saw a monster, seemingly half human and half beast, with great bat-like wings. A dazzling light that fairly blinded him came from a blunt horn-like protuberance in the middle of the animal's forehead, and it gave off a stupefying odor that almost overcame him. We already heard these stories, so this is not a new one.
But they're using 1903 words for cat headlines, and it's so much better this way.
The doctor discharged his weapon and fled into his office, barring doors and windows, and remained there in abject terror until the next morning. Peter Dunn, cashier of the only bank in town, fearing bank robbers, loaded a repeating shotgun with shells filled with buckshot and prepared to guard his funds next night. This is a part of the job, right, at that time? If you're a cashier at the bank in town?
Oh, yeah. You also got to be a doctor.
You got to be there all night with a gun. Yep, he's probably the town doctor. At 2 o'clock, he was blinded by the presence of light at great intensity. Eventually, he recovered his senses sufficiently to distinguish the monster and fired through the window. The plate glass and sash were torn out, and the monster disappeared. Next morning, imprints of the great three-toed feet were discernible in the soft earth. Plaster casts of them were taken. That night, Dr. O.V. White saw the monster climbing down a telephone pole using a beak, much in the manner of a parrot. Okay. That was the deep bass video that Taylor just showed us. Yeah. Clearly.
Showed all of you, apparently.
Yeah. As
iPod podcasting has come a long way.
It has. As it struck the ground, it seemed to travel in leaps like a kangaroo. They're using a lot of different animals to describe.
Yeah, they really are. There was another creature that was a kangaroo, was it not? I forget which one. But like the entire thing was like, yeah, this is a kangaroo at the train yard.
Cannot remember what the hell that was.
That was at Halloween. I can't remember which one it was, though.
Using its huge featherless wings to assist, it gave off no light. He fired at it, and he believes he wounded it. Well, this is the first time I've heard that it was wounded. The shot was followed by an overpowering odor. Sidney Gregg, attracted by the shot, saw the monster flying away. But the climax came Friday night. The whole town was aroused by this time. Professor Martin, principal, also doctor, principal of the school, decided that from the description, it was an antediluvian animal. I know that word.
Yeah.
Shortly after midnight, the Bible, right? Yeah. Antediluvian.
It has to do something with Noah, does it not?
Yeah. Before the flood.
Yeah. Before biblical flood. That's what.
So this animal should not have been survived
the flood. Yeah, it's going to survive the flood. It fucking flies.
It flies, yes. Like all the winged animals.
Yeah, the winged ones are going to make it up.
We had no choice but to keep the winged beings. Even if we wanted to destroy them.
Flood out the winged or the swimmer. Those ones are just going to survive.
Especially the swimmers. Shortly after midnight, J.L. Platt, foreman of the brick plant, beard, a peculiar sound, beard? It definitely says beard. A peculiar sound in an abandoned coal mine. And as the men had reported a similar sound before, a body of volunteers started an investigation. Presently, the monster emerged from the shaft, accompanied by a smaller one. A score of shots were fired without effect. The whole town was aroused and a vigil was maintained the rest of the night, but without result until just at dawn when the two monsters returned and disappeared down the shaft. A watch was kept again last night, but without result. The town geniuses are devising various plane to capture the monsters.
May I just add that
the
early 1900s, they were too comfortable throwing around the word aroused.
Yes. And, you know, I have to say, this article does lack the addresses of all the people
who cited this.
And phone numbers. And I also don't see who wrote the article. It doesn't have that on there, and that was quite a difficult read. It makes me feel better about my eyesight, though. They're definitely all doctors.
They're definitely all doctors, and he didn't know how to be a journalist, so he didn't put his name down. Or he wrote it in such a scribbly fashion that nobody could discern it at the newspaper store.
There were only 1,000 doctors in that town. In 1980, sporadic sightings started to be reported again. The first report was given by a man who was walking near the coal mine and reported seeing a 5-foot-long bat-like creature flying overhead. He claimed that he had never heard of the Van Meter monster before his sighting. Which, you gotta think, in Van Meter, Iowa, that this is probably a huge story that everybody talks about, especially when there's only 1,000 doctors in the town.
Yeah, I Googled Van Meter visitor, and one of the first things that comes up on Google searches is Van Meter Visitor Festival.
Yeah, you gotta think. I mean, there probably wasn't a festival in like 1905 to 1980.
Maybe.
You gotta think it was probably renowned for this.
Oh, and apparently you need to eat at the Fifth Quarter, because that's the only restaurant that shows up when you just Google. How's its reviews?
It's ran by a family who had a doctor
for years.
In the family. Yep. In the 2000s, a family was driving to Van Meter when they said they saw a giant bat-like creature lying dead on the side of the road. When they went back to investigate, the creature was gone.
They didn't?
Yeah, you heard me right.
They drove by and said, huh?
Yeah.
You know, and then they kept going. And then at some point, they're like, you know
Hold
what?
Hold on.
You remember that dead body we saw on the side of the road? We should have probably stopped. And you know what? They probably said, you know what? There's not a good turnaround here. We'll wait for the next overpass. And it was like 10 miles down the road.
It was one of the two, yeah. Definitely. And then they went back and it was gone. And they're like, probably wasn't anything anyway. Yeah,
but we should tell the newspaper.
In 2006, a local pastor, they got pastors at this point, 2006, saw a creature flying in the sky.
Dr. Pastor.
He saw a creature flying in the sky, which he described as looking like a dragon. Totally different creature.
Yep.
After investigating, he came across the account for the original. None of these people have ever heard about the Van Meter visitor before. So he investigates and finds out about the Van Meter legend and confirms that those descriptions matched what he had seen. But it's funny because he called it a dragon. So it doesn't seem to me like the descriptions match.
No, not quite.
No. Thereafter, there were two more sightings in 2014 and 2020. In both these sightings, the witnesses described the creature as a giant bird rather than a bat-like monster, so we aren't sure whether they had seen the Van Meter visitor or another creature. Even though the local pastor said dragon and they circled back, he was like, yeah, that was definitely it. Van Meter now hosts a Van Meter Visitor Festival every September on the anniversary of the sighting, so I'm adding that to the bucket list. I wonder when that started.
I don't know. But it is September 27th, 2025 this year. So, ChadLewisResearch.com. You can get tickets there. Who is Chad Lewis?
Chad Lewis, a doctor.
Well, or a child of a doctor who had to settle there.
Yeah. You could only get a homestead if you were a doctor. Who is this guy?
He might get his own episode. He likes his cryptids.
He looks like he's related to Sean Penn, maybe.
Yeah, you know what?
Is it Sean Penn?
I don't think so. He's younger and a little chubby.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Beer. But, okay. Related to Sean Penn nonetheless.
Probably.
They both do spell and pronounce their last names differently.
Oh no, go to the About Me section. I'm scared.
Bio? Yeah. But, yeah. Oh, that is a shower head he's got?
I don't know, but he's pointing it at me and yeah. I don't like it. Okay.
Huh. Okay.
Here are just a few places I have ventured in search of strange and unusual. Chupacabras, Puerto Rico, Costa Rica. I said that wrong, but I'm sticking to it. Tata Duende, Belize. Mothman, Point Pleasant. He could have gone to Chicago. Wendigo, Canada. Van Meter Visitor. Why am I buying tickets on this guy's website?
I also don't quite understand what this guy is about. Anyhow, we could probably save this for a different time.
Yeah. VIP entrance tickets to Van Meter Visitor Festival. $20. That's it.
Or $10 if you don't want to be a VIP. Don't know the difference.
I think I'd spring for it. Okay, moving on. Next up, the humanoid encounter. Kind of. I don't know. The Solway Firth Spaceman, which is an apparent anomalous photograph. This took place May 23rd, 1964 in Burgh Marsh near Solway Firth in Cumbria, England. While on a family outing with his wife and daughter Elizabeth, Jim Templeton, a Carlisle fireman, took a series of photographs in an open field. Quote, "We went on a normal outing and picked our spot," Jim Templeton recalled in a BBC interview before his death in 2011. "We sat down and I said, now I'll get some photos of you with the new dress on," end quote. He's saying that to his daughter. It doesn't explicitly say that, but When the film was developed, one image revealed something inexplicable. Behind his daughter in the photograph was a strange figure. What looked like a person in a white suit with a helmet or dark visor resembling an astronaut or spaceman was in the background. Templeton insisted that no one else was present at the time, and the figure had not been seen when the picture was taken. The photograph quickly gained attention from the press. It was dubbed the Solway First Spaceman Photo, capturing imaginations worldwide during the height of the space race and UFO interest. The mysterious figure seemingly appeared from nowhere, became a cultural curiosity. Mr. Templeton took it to the police in Carlisle, and they declared there was nothing out of the ordinary, no illegal activity at the very least. Kodak, who developed the photo, examined the negative and confirmed that the image was not manipulated. The figure was physically present at the time the photo was taken. They even offered a reward to anyone who could prove that the photo was faked, and it was never claimed. I mean, that would just get Jim right away if he was like, I can prove it. We wouldn't be here today. Following the publicity, which this one was news to me, Templeton claimed that he was visited by two men in black suits who identified themselves only as number 7 and number 11. They asked him to take them to the location where the photo had been taken. And Templeton said they acted strangely, and when he explained that he had not seen the spaceman in real time, they became frustrated and left abruptly. One of the reasons the photo entered UFO folklore was a coincidental event at the Badia Dam missile testing site. I don't know if I'm saying that right at all. A planned launch of the Blue Streak missile was reportedly halted due to sightings of two figures on the launch range, said to resemble the figure in Templeton's photograph. Side note, it wasn't actually until after it was canceled due to the two figures when the people operating this that canceled saw the photo on the front page of an Australian newspaper, where they're stunned that the figure looked the same as the figures they saw close to the missile. Though there is no official confirmation of this incident, the story added another layer of intrigue that contributed to conspiracy theories about government knowledge of extraterrestrial activity. Not that any government was actually, well, except for the cancellation of the missile. The prevailing explanation today is far more mundane and likely more accurate. Investigators, including photographic analysis, later suggest that the spaceman was likely Templeton's wife, Annie. She had walked into the background of the shot without his noticing, which is weird, but I don't know.
You got to remember, at the time, like, you couldn't look at photos until they were developed, and like, it would take you a while to develop them. So when you actually got to look at the photo, you wouldn't necessarily remember exactly what was happening in that photo.
Absolutely. She was wearing a pale blue dress, which, due to an overexposure and the limitations of 1960s film stock, appeared bright white. Her back was turned, and the crop shape of her head and shoulders may have given the illusion of a helmeted figure. Evidence that supports this theory would include the figure's proportions and posture align with someone standing with their back to the camera, which I don't know that that supports the wife versus a spaceman, to be honest.
Something easily explained. And the whole thing is, if it's back facing, why would it look like a spaceman if it's the back of the spaceman?
Spacemen turn their back sometimes.
Well, they do, but they don't need a visor on the back. And the whole thing
due to popular belief, that's true.
But I guess, I don't know, aliens could technically have eyes on both sides of their head. I don't know.
That's true.
Or just backwards postures.
Yeah. I wonder what the Serpo papers would have to say about this.
Oh, it was probably pooping in the sand just over there.
Just like a cat.
Yeah.
Other photographs from that day show Annie wearing the same dress. I did see it. I don't know. It's like one of those like pictures you have to stare at for a long time to see something in.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. I do not see it at all. I don't see a woman with her back turned. All I see is a spaceman, but maybe once I see it, I won't be able to unsee it. You know, when that happens. The camera angle and the lighting could easily distort the figure into a misleading form. And that's the thing about old photography, I guess, as well. Which actually brings up another cool thing, because nowadays you can't trust a photograph for totally other reasons other than what we're talking about right now, right? It's not because of overexposure or because, like, you don't have the problems anymore of what's-his-face, Billy Meyer, where he's just, like, fucking taking pictures of Christmas ornaments. And he's like, look at it, it's a UFO. And it's clearly just someone taking a fucking picture of a UFO. Like, he thinks he's manipulating a photograph so well. Or something like this. Now you're dealing with things like AI, where, I mean, AI is still, you can still kind of pick it out
for now,
from not being a believable photograph. And it's small things too. It's like the hands are weird, or it doesn't understand English, or something like that.
That bothers me the most, that you can't make a photo with English in it.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know why it doesn't know English. But it's such a cool, like, I don't know if it's cool or worrisome that this is where it's going.
My personal theory is that English AI outsources its photo generation to, like, Spanish or, like, third world AI. And that's why it doesn't speak English.
That's so true. It only vaguely speaks English. It has English letters.
It knows what English letters kind of look like.
Yeah. So it's definitely not a problem you see anymore, where this is more of an anomaly that you're seeing in a photograph that is an actual photograph.
And I do think an important one in this one too, because I have looked into this one before, or at least done some research into it, is this is one of those stories where it's somebody doesn't actually see the thing that they took the picture of, and it's only looking at the photo where it arises. And Nick Pope has spoken of this before, where he says he gets these sometimes and he's really skeptical of where they didn't see anything at the time. And he gives an example of one that he got with UFOs in the top left corner of the photo. And they did some analysis and they realized the guy at the time who took the photo didn't see it, but it was when he had it, but years later he's looking at it and he saw a UFO in the top left corner. They realized he had stapled the photo and then photocopied it. And he didn't realize that the photocopy, because it was a photocopy, that the UFOs were the back, like, protrusions of the staples coming through the photo.
Yeah.
So it's just
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just something that you wouldn't be aware of at the time of the photo, which, when you take the photo, we don't get the immediate feedback that we do on digital stuff now, that it's different with old photos.
Yeah, it's not a problem anymore.
It's not as much of a problem, I should say. It does still happen every
time. That's true. But just such a contrasting period that we're living in, where we're looking at very different phenomenons, where one is more of either an anomaly, where it's not turning out as you can properly interpret what's going on in the photo. I don't know that that's how you would summarize a Billy Meyer photo, though, because it clearly looks like garbage can lengths.
Yeah.
Christmas ornaments.
But he was speaking German, the pure language, so who was what he was trying to do?
You just have to believe someone who's speaking German. And something like this. So just a cool contrast to kind of think of when sometimes, you know, you're scrolling through TikTok or what have you, wherever else you can watch videos, Reddit or whatever. Sometimes it's hard to tell the AI videos from actual videos now, and that really creeps me out. I was watching TikTok the other day and it was people rescuing whales from the ocean. And so I had to look at the comments and people were like, this is clearly AI. People can't touch things like that. And I was like, oh. It didn't look like AI at all, but it was AI, and it fooled me, because I was like, wow, this is crazy that they're doing this, and it was AI, so not that it relates to this at all, but it kind of does. Anyhow, while the spaceman likely wasn't a visitor from another world, the incident reflects how easily our perception can be deceived by lights, angles, and expectation, as well as AI. It also, can you imagine what Billy Meyer could do with AI now?
I don't think he could do much. Do you really think he could type in prompts?
No.
He seems like he'd be terrible at prompts.
But he's so good at writing. Look at that website. There's so many entries.
We got to revisit that sometime.
I know, we really do. It also demonstrates how a single unexplained image can ignite the imagination of an era, especially when gripped by space fever and Cold War paranoia. It still lives on. There is a whole subculture of people who want to believe in this stuff and will point to stuff like that, that something's going on. I do believe there's stuff going on, but sometimes it can be explained things, and those aren't the ones that we have to look at. It's the other ones, like the Van Meter visitor in a town full of doctors.
Who would suspect the pterodactyl? Yes.
Exactly. The Solway First Spaceman endures not necessarily because of what it shows, but because of what we want it to show. And that is the end of my episode.
Oh, those are fun. One
They're
winged
fun.
Creature and one with the potential to fly, just without the winged.
Exactly. That was beautiful.
And yeah, interesting. How close is Iowa to the Mothman belt?
I think pretty close. Yeah, did you not get Mothman vibes of it too?
A little bit, yeah. But not quite either. It's kind of weird to say. Yeah, you know, it's right below Minnesota. So yeah, it's kind of close to that area. Yeah, and I just love, everybody has their unique cryptids that just grow and grow, and they develop it. It's, I don't know how to feel about the Solway Firth spaceman, just because, like, it is such one picture where they didn't even see things at the time. But how did it not get a festival? Come to think of it, how did that clown alien homeless man not get his own festival?
I love that clown alien guy. This parts of that were so creepy, but it was so clearly someone trying to abduct children.
Yeah, a little bit. Oh, it's always great looking at these in hindsight and with a good laugh, because sometimes I feel that's all you need to break through the mysterious of it all.
We live in such a different world that a lot of these things that we visit on our episodes just could not exist in the world as we know it in this time and place, unfortunately. Solway Firth, and what the hell is that clown's name?
I don't know. The Sandown Clown. Sandown Clown.
Sandown Clown. Good job. Yeah. He just couldn't exist this day and age. People wouldn't just be like,
No, there's too many homeless these days. Yeah. due to the capitalist nature of our society, we just have too many of the Sandown Clowns out on the beaches.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids are warned about them early.
Children are already warned not to enter the clowns' habitat.
You don't enter clown domains. But yeah,
it's a different world.
I think that's a reasonable place to end it. So
yep,
I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes, or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.